The church's role in politics is as old as the slogan, "In God We Trust." The evangelical movement's association with the Republican Party is a relatively recent phenomenon, though. Various denominations have found themselves as activists for Republicans or Democrats down through U.S. history. But since the 1960s, the abortion issue has pushed many religious groups solidly into the Republican camp. But could that be changing? Brendan Robertson is founder of the Revangelical Movement, an organization that promotes an alternative evangelical perspective. He joins me now. Brendan Robertson, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
So why are evangelicals traditionally associated with the Republican Party, and why do you believe that can change?
You know, that's the question I think that a lot of millennial evangelicals are scratching their heads at and asking. The history of the religious right movement among evangelicals started about maybe 50 years ago with people like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell. And from this end of history, it looks like there was a lot to do with gaining a political platform in the United States and kind of having a prominent position of power. And I think that what's changing among millennial evangelicals is that we're looking back at that history of the religious right and people like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, who I have no relation to, by the way, and the things that they stand for seem so inconsistent with Jesus, which is what we're all about as evangelical Christians.
And, you know, one of the ironies is that Jerry Falwell and the religious right, certainly under Reagan in the 1980s, while they got a prominent position in terms of their message, they never really got anything politically from the Republican Party in terms of actual legislation. Reagan, according to many evangelicals, sold them out.
Looking back at the history, that's what we repeatedly see, is that there's not actual much gain that comes from it, but there is definitely a platform that they otherwise wouldn't have.
Now, do you think that your vision of evangelical Christianity could match what some activist Catholics did in the 1980s, along with the evangelicals, although they were with the Democratic Party? They were very much against U.S. policy in El Salvador, for instance, created a sanctuary movement within their churches. Are you talking about those kinds of politics, or are you just talking about shifting your hat from Republican to Democrat?
Yeah, I definitely think there could be parallels. But one thing I want to emphasize is that what's not happening is that millennial evangelicals aren't switching from conservative to liberal. We're not simply just responding in a cynical way. What's actually going on is we're looking again, we're reexamining the words of Jesus, we're reexamining the principles that we claim to live our lives by from a religious perspective. And that's causing us to change on views on things like poverty and immigration reform. And we're even looking at things like marriage equality, where we might have a traditional evangelical theology of homosexuality, but we look at that and see that it has no contradiction with the political position that the LGBTQ community has the right to get married. And
so in a sense, you're struggling with the same kinds of contradictions that Pope Francis is struggling with within the Catholic Church, in the sense that neither the left nor the right represent a clear vision of what he believes Christianity to be and what I presume you believe Christianity to be.
Absolutely. Pope Francis is quickly becoming the spokesperson for a whole bunch of disengaged, disenthralled evangelicals, Catholics, Christians all across the line.
Would you say you have any numbers behind you? Is it just Brendan and a couple of his friends? Or what's the sort of momentum that you might have to actually make this a movement?
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's certainly not a Brandon thing. When I started this off maybe 5 years ago, really transitioning from a fundamentalist right-wing political perspective, and the blinders kind of were removed, and I began to see that there are thousands upon thousands of young evangelicals, many of them in Washington right now doing some significant things, like Josh Dubois, who is the president's spiritual advisor, all these young evangelicals who come from a conservative perspective and yet are seeing that, yeah, my theology may remain the same, but the politics need to match the theology, and that's not what the religious right, that's not what the Democrats or the Republicans are standing for. We want to stand for the common good of all people.
Speaking to us from Chicago, founder of the Revangelical Movement, Brendan Robertson, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, John.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily workouts are designed to improve memory and attention. Dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. It's all at lumosity.com.
So is Brandon Robertson, founder of the Revangelical movement, who we just spoke to, is he part of a movement or an outlier? It was a little hard for him to answer the question, so we wanted to pose it to Krista Tippett, host of the public radio show On Being, which explores spirituality and religion in everyday life. She's also the author of Speaking of Faith. Welcome back, Krista.
Good to be with you again, John.
So what do you think? Is he an outlier? The fact that he's an outlier doesn't necessarily diminish his significance, but I can't tell if there's a real movement to rebrand politically the evangelical movement in America right now.
Well, I'd like to be a little bit provocative and, you know, pull the lens back farther. I actually think the moral majority was the outlier. The people we have come to call identify as evangelicals now are the same group who in the early 20th century withdrew from politics, withdrew from public life, said, in fact, you know, this is the age of world war and global economic depression. They said, we are going to focus on inner life. We're going to focus on personal salvation. What you had in the late 20th century, and Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, you know, really came to represent this, was this strident reaction against this, this reemergence into the public sphere. But they never represented all evangelicals, you know, and I also want journalists to get a bit of credit here. There was this kind of, you know, suddenly people were talking about, wow, 40% of the American public is evangelical, and they were lumping all those people into a box. But 40% of the American people is and has always been a very diverse group of voices. So I think that what Brandon represents is the untold story that started to happen immediately after the turn of the century through the Bush administration of evangelicals themselves and not just millennials, you know, rebelling against this being represented by Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson in the public sphere and looking back at their core values and really, again, all those stereotypes and those boxes about who evangelicals are and what they believe. It was a very short-lived thing, and it never was the whole story.
Well, by that analysis, the moral majority becomes less of an outlier and more just the tip of the parade, the beginning band in the parade of a much more diverse group of people looking for a home. You mentioned the beginning of the 20th century and this withdrawal from public life. You know, the temperance movement in the 1800s was a hugely church-driven movement, which also helped to spawn feminism. And so, you know, if you go back far enough, the church is very central to politics in America.
Well, absolutely. And all across the spectrum, as you say, you know, the Seneca Falls meeting was held in a church. It's Christians in this country and people who we would call evangelicals. Again, you know, that label is a little bit misleading and tricky. It's been used in different ways. But these were the people who fought against slavery. You know, and also, again, I do want to make my point that I think journalism shares a lot of the blame. Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson made for great sound bites. They were entertaining, right? But all along, even in those years, you had people like Ron Sider at Evangelicals for Social Action. You had Jim Wallace and the Sojourners community. You had stunning things happening in the National Association of Evangelicals during the George W. Bush administration. Evangelical leaders saying, we do care about abortion. It's not theologically right for us. We do care. We do believe that the church should not condone gay marriage. But saying our agenda, our social agenda, must be much broader. You know, as Brandon said, picking up on global poverty, really beginning to think about climate change and the natural world and finding ways that at the heart of the Bible and Christian theology, evangelicals wanted to be weighing in on this. So it's been a more complex picture that just wasn't covered. And then I think Brandon and these millennial, this next generation evangelicals are really gaining a public voice and expressing something.
Let me go back to one of the details you mentioned, and I don't want to sort of date us, but I think the Seneca Falls meeting being held in a church needs some explanation. Certainly that was the beginning of a very important moment on the left in American politics, but how do you see it?
I guess what, you know, the larger point I'm trying to make is it's still complicated that the stereotypes don't fit, that evangelicals fall on one side of the spectrum. It didn't fit when the Seneca Falls meeting, which was a core moment in, you know, what we would later call women's liberation, happened in a holiness church. It didn't fit in the early 20th century when we started to think evangelicals are people who primarily are against abortion and against gay rights. And now the picture is more complicated, too, as Brandon said. You know, the last time I looked at statistics about young evangelicals, you would have a picture that might look politically confusing. You might have them being less in favor of abortion, far more in favor than their parents' generation on LGBT issues and certainly on gay marriage. And then you might have them very, very activist in issues, even partnering with liberals on issues that we've come to see as liberal issues, like, again, immigration, global poverty, climate change. But here's the key. Sometimes when these young evangelicals also, let's say they will say to you, theologically, abortion is something they oppose. But they're trying to find, as they would say, faithful ways to take that up as an issue. So even if they hold that position, which looks like a Republican position, they may not be finding it a useful way to spend their energy working on the legality of abortion or the constitutional right. They, a lot of them, are saying, okay, if we're against abortion in our church, we have to create a community that models what's at stake here in human terms, where we are helping people avoid pregnancy, where if someone becomes pregnant and they don't want to be, we as a community take that on as a responsibility. So again, even when the values look Republican or Democrat, it may be a theological and ecclesiastical response rather than a political response.
It's about
that,
the
that's
people.
A big shift.
It's about the people of faith, not the institutions, which is something that Pope Francis may beginning to unlock there at the Vatican. Krista Tippett, thanks so much.
Yeah, great to be with you.
Krista Tippett, host of the public radio show On Being and the author of Speaking of Faith.